Monica Araya is at the forefront of a global campaign to get rid of fossil fuel vehicles in favour of emissions-free transport, and says the next 5 years are utterly critical. She's a member of the United Nations Climate Champions Team, a distinguished fellow with the Drive Electric campaign, a coalition of over 70 organisations lobbying for the cause. It was instrumental in persuading the European Commission to propose that after 2035 there would be no more sales of petrol and diesel cars. So far, the Drive Electric campaign has raised $500 million to fund its campaigning. And with more than a billion internal combustion vehicles around the world, how much progress has been made to change the system? Monica Araya is with us from Oslo. Thanks for your patience. Welcome, Monica.
Hi. Thank you so much for having me. I'm very, very happy to do anything connected to New Zealand.
Wonderful. There are so many parts to this issue. Politics, business, citizenry, urban design, the economics of purchasing large assets that you hold for a long time. How does your organisation break down the mission?
Well, that's one of the key questions and puzzles of our time, because we know how much our cities, our countries, our, you know, any urban space that we can think of, and even rural space, have been built around cars. And those cars have a lot of emissions, tailpipes, and they are noisy. So it's, if you ask me this on a Monday, it does sound, I can imagine for people listening, as something almost impossible. And yet, the good news is that several things are happening at the same time that give us a window of opportunity in the next 5 years. So let's go into the different pieces of this. One is, just to get it out of the way, that you cannot do this with one organization or in one country or by pressing just one lever, meaning policy or business or activism. You have to press all of them simultaneously. And the key for the next 2 to 5 years is to do as much as we can to change what is being produced in the big markets, because there will be ripple effects, because we understand a lot of this market. So one key message for anybody who's listening, who thinks, yeah, not so sure that we're going to get rid of the internal combustion engine yet, is to look at not so much the percentage of electric vehicles in a certain market, but the rate growth of adoption that we see in Europe, in China, in California, in these big markets that concentrate where these vehicles are being produced.
What's the rate of growth we are? What's the rate of growth we are seeing, Monica, in some of those big markets?
That's, yes. So, for example, if we look at right now where the largest, you know, where the biggest acceleration is happening, we look at Europe and we see at this point, for example, in the context of Norway, it's a small country, and I hope you guys in New Zealand relate to it, because it's about 5 million people and is a lab for the world. You know, it's the first market that is getting to a mass adoption rate. So you have, for example, in this particular country, I'm from Costa Rica, I'm not Norwegian, but I live here. And in this country, for example, at this point, you have about, you know, in the context of Oslo, some months you have 70% of the sales going electric, 100% electric. And this, when you look at where they were, for example, 10 years ago, that gives you a sense of what is going on. But the point here, and I think the point that I really would like people to start thinking about, is that the market alone is not going to do the homework for us. Even if we know that technology is improving, that is getting cheaper and better, and that's a good thing when something gets cheaper and better, the market alone is not going to do the job. And that is why we need to build coalitions around a certain package in the policy space.
Before we get there, though, I do want to find out from you, how much some of the big manufacturers, for example, have already pledged to stop building any new petrol or diesel vehicles by, say, 2035. Now, that's a much bigger range time period than you're aiming for, but they can always bring that forward if the economics encourage them to. So what is happening with some of those big car manufacturers?
Excellent, because that is the landing point. It has to be about the supply. Of course, we can do a lot with the demand and with people, and we can get to that point. But it is about sending signals to the, you know, sending those signals to the manufacturers, because precisely what you said, we need to have this calendar and we have to have a date. And after that date, we have to be able to say, after that, we're not going to produce these cars anymore. And by that, I mean petrol and diesel cars. And some of them are saying different things. So that is important to keep in mind. Not all of them are on the same page, because even if they say we're putting together this line of EVs and they are really amazing and they are doing all these great things, we need to go to each of them and say, great, very good that you're putting together all these EVs. When are you going to start producing the old ones? So they are saying several things. So for example, GM, an iconic company in the US, General Motors, is saying they are not going to produce them after 2035. If you take Ford, they have said about the same, but only for the European market, which is not great, but it's a star. And then if you look at other companies like Daimler, they are already starting to say, you know, it's around 2030, 2035. And then the other thing they are saying is we have stopped our department that produces or designs new internal combustion engine models. That being said, we can go by one, and at Glasgow in November, at a COP, this climate conference organized by the UN, there was a declaration by certain companies, certain investors, certain cities, and basically various stakeholders are trying to say the same thing. After a certain day, we're not going to sell them. After a certain day, we're not going to buy them. After a certain day, we're not going to finance them. And for now, and you said that when you made the question, for now we're saying 2035, but that is the latest.
What are the policy changes you flagged earlier that will be needed to be part of this complex web we were talking about?
It's not in policy milestones. Some lie. Excuse me?
Yes, you were saying earlier that there needs to be policy changes as part of this, just before we talked about what the vehicle manufacturers. What are they?
So it's several things. If you think about it, in terms of policy choices, you have something that the state has to say, right? And for example, some countries have to put those dates themselves. They can't wait for the manufacturers to set them. And usually when manufacturers say they're going to stop doing something, it's because they already know policy is coming. So national states have to do several things, at least three. They have to say, for example, in Europe, they are saying by 2035, we're not going to sell them anymore. Then you also have to make investments in infrastructure, because these vehicles, and think about commercial vehicles like taxis or vans, or, you know, there are a lot of options, not just private cars. That's an important point. There's a lot of options. They have to have good infrastructure, and countries have to make them in, turn these into potential opportunities for the private sector to invest in, so that it is an ecosystem that grows. They also have to deal with smart grids and all that. So that's the other pillar, investments and the signal to the infrastructure. And at the same time, and for a while, not forever, governments can do a lot with their tax policy, not only in terms of making sure that whatever is cleaner is cheaper, but also in terms of doing something more complicated, which is to make sure that whatever is polluting is more expensive. For example, in Norway, If you try to buy a big SUV that is very polluting, even if it's new, is polluting, that car is going to be expensive. So by doing that, you really make sure that the market gets faster to where it needs to go. And at the same time, and I really want to make sure that if there is somebody there with a, you know, with a lot of love for bikes and public transit, I hope that we agree that we're not just promoting EVs and cars. It's part of a vision of zero emissions. And that vision has to include zero emission buses, zero emission zones for cities. And of course, electric bikes and bikes will be much better in a city for the person riding them if the city's zero emissions and the cars do not have a tailpipe and the cars are more silent.
Monica, where are the cities, probably cities, that are doing mass transport well? And by that I mean whether it's electric buses. There's a bit of an obsession there, I have to say, in New Zealand at the moment with light rail. Two of our major cities stuck in interminable long debates over where and when and how and whether. Or whether it is really good cycleways, electric scooters, whatever you want to use. Where are the models for cities who've really got modern public transport right? And then how did they do it?
That's, I think, one of the most important questions in this debate, because it affects a lot of people. And I think my theory is that we will win this to the extent we bring people on board. It can't be just climate arguments or, you know, moral arguments. It has to be pragmatic, and people will come on board if they see their everyday life improve. So getting the public transit right is important. I actually, because I am from Costa Rica, from Latin America, and because I live in Europe and I lived in the US, I have a kind of triangle in my head when you ask me this. I do think that right now, in terms of the older cities, the ones that got started with public transit many years ago, probably have the closest to an ideal situation, which is choice. If you are in Amsterdam, you have choices. You can bike, you can have a private car, you can go in a tram, in a bus, in a train. And the mayor will tell you, choose whatever you want. All I demand is that it's zero emission. Everything will have to be zero emissions by 2030, including the boats in the channel, in the canals. So you have that kind of vision. And then in the other, you know, other parts of the world where you have most growth, most population growth, say emerging markets, you have a very difficult trade-off there. Because the question is, do we start trying to do trains and trams, which are expensive, beautiful, but expensive, or do we just go for the electric buses? Because it's cheaper and it's easier. And I find that in places, middle-income countries like Colombia, 50 million people, Chile, you know, a high-income country for the developing world, they are just going for the electric buses. And the word that is both interesting and scary for many people is China. That is the key word there. China is putting a lot of electric buses out there, cheaper than the ones from the US and definitely cheaper than the ones, from Europe, cheaper than the ones in Europe. And that has been transformational for emerging markets because they are seeing the benefits. So right now, the largest fleet of electric buses in emerging markets outside China is in Chile. In Latin America, and in the case of Bogota, Colombia, a city of 8 million people, the mayor, a fantastic woman, has already said that after this year, they will only buy electric buses. So I don't think there is an answer to the question of what is the best choice. What I can tell you is that I cannot imagine any city around the world today that would not benefiting from electrifying their public of buses.
Bogota has articulated buses too. Don't they have a system where they're almost like mini trains?
No, that's really impressive. I'm sure they would be very happy to know that this is known in New Zealand. It's a very interesting story. Hopefully you can tell that story one day in your program, because basically it came out of this sense of being without choice, you know. And so basically somebody smart or a smart group, it's never one person, it's usually a group, came up with the idea of this super fast, it's almost like we call it carril, no? It's this lane that you put the buses on. And basically the idea is that if you get there in the middle of the street, it's almost like a tram. And in fact, there is a Colombian woman living in New Zealand, Margarita Parra. You should have her in the program. I'm sure she would be very happy to tell you the story of how that happened, because it's very inspirational for a lot of countries that know that it's probably not realistic to have what Europe has right now.
Monica, thank you very much. Monica Araya is a member of the United Nations Climate Champions team, and she is, as we said, a distinguished fellow with this Drive Electric campaign.